Hello.
Good evening,
my name
everybody.
Is Joseph G., and I'm a refugee from several 12-step programs and co-creator of RumRadio.org. RumRadio.org was created to inform, inspire, and empower sponsorship locally and internationally to be the very best, both personally and spiritually. A sponsor is someone who takes you through the 12 steps. A sponsor is a guide, a mentor, a friend, and a teacher. A sponsor is the older brother and sister we never had. There are many 12-step programs. Overeaters Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Debtors Anonymous, and on and on Anonymous. There's even a Paranoids Anonymous. The only problem, no one will tell you where they hold the meetings. As people in recovery, we have learned that addiction is a spiritual malady requiring a spiritual solution. We are not weak people trying to get strong, nor are we bad people trying to get good. We are sick people trying to get well. Rum Radio is for anyone that thinks they might have a problem with excessive compulsive behavior that manifests itself in addiction. RumRadio.org addresses the A&A model, but can be easily conformed to any adverse spiritual malady that manifests itself into addictive behavior. The particular spiritual malady is but a symptom of the disease. At RumRadio.org, we get down to causes and conditions. We in recovery have discovered that the one assurance of getting happy, joyous, and free was to work with someone who suffers from the same malady. But you can't give away something you don't have. Rum Radio is that resource, and like usual, if you find a benefit, pass it on. Take what you need and leave the rest. I have dedicated my time, talents, and treasure to this end. The credit for this work is God's and the fellowship. This is Joseph G. See you on the radio. RumRadio.org.
Hello, this is Joseph. Welcome,
and this is Harold.
Everyone. And Harold B. from
Texas.
Yes,
hello, everybody.
I wanted to thank Hoyt Carter and WNAH for carrying us live in Nashville and some of the surrounding states. I believe we're in parts of Kentucky and in Arkansas. All the folks out there that care to join us, you're more than welcome. WNAH is doing this as a public service announcement and giving back to the community in a way that to show that they care about their listeners and their clients. Harold, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great, Joseph. It's nice to be on the broadcast again with you, and I'm looking forward to the topic and to having some folks join us. Why don't you give out the phone number?
Oh, good idea. The call-in number, if you'd like to join us with a discussion or you had something on your mind that pertained to addiction, doesn't have to be specifically to the topic. It's always nice to keep the spin. But what we found is anytime we talk about recovery, it's always about the gratitude of the information and the ability to refrain from addictive behavior through a power greater than ourselves, I care to call Jesus Christ. Now, some have other different higher powers. That's the generic form of understanding God. God's big enough of my understanding that he's okay with that. AA has always been considered a spiritual kindergarten. So it's a good way to get started. Harold has credentials. I do not. I have no letters after my name. I have no certificates of completion or diplomas of agreement. But I have spent the night at a Holiday Inn Express.
I love that. I love it. And did you mention the number?
I don't know. Did I get?
I don't
have
think
so many
did.
Words. And so, no, so many words and so few thoughts. Okay. If you have a pencil or a pen or a memory that surpasses mine for sure, it's 949-534-0621. Again. 949-534-0621.
Good job.
Tonight we're going to, thank you. Tonight we're going to be speaking about the secondary addiction. And this is of my experience and of my opinion. What I found is being a sponsor and personal experience that once we give up our primary addiction, whatever that might be, I always go with the alcohol as a primary addiction, but it could be other things too. But to me, it was alcohol and drugs. And once I gave that up, there was other underlying addictions that I hadn't really addressed because it was covered up or manifested through alcoholism. And what I found is one of the main or I find most often, like I said, it's hard to make a blanket statement because everybody's an individual. But as far as I've understood and been in the program for going on 15 years, sex addiction is a primary secondary addiction. You find that, Harold?
Every week I meet someone who has switched addictions. It's so easy to, when you give up one thing, to switch to something else, to try to hide from reality or bury the feelings that come up. What I found early on is that when I stopped self-medicating my emotions with alcohol, I tended to find something else to medicate my emotions, to suppress my feelings, and really got nowhere until I started to work the steps with pen and paper and a sponsor to actually deal with things rather than just squash them down and run away, running away from reality. So tonight we get to talk about some secondary addictions, and sex addiction is a huge problem, but it's hardly ever talked about.
I think it's almost the society. I don't know if it's the society we live in, or it's always a forbidden topic. And I don't know why it's natural. It's one of the gifts of having a body. I think it's the spin that's put on it. Let me start with this. I had a sponsee. Nick. And Nick had 8 years of continuous sobriety, sponsored other men in the addiction program for alcohol. He asked me to be his sponsor. And that's common that you change sponsors. I think that's a good idea after a certain period of time. Some people have the same sponsor a lifetime, and they like that, and it works for them, and I would not say anything to anyone about that, but I believe changing sponsors is like getting a new coat of paint on a house, having a little different understanding, reinvigorating and regenerating your program of 12-step recovery. And Nick came over, and I said, well, did you want to work the steps, or you know, why are you asking me? Is he the sponsor? Whatever it is, let me know. And he told me that we went over, you know, well, I'm not sure, and, you know, and all this hemming and hawing and back and forth. And finally, I dragged it out of him, literally had to drag it out of him because he was embarrassed. He had an addiction to pornography. Now, here's a man that's 8 years, been in the program, has no problem saying he's an addict or an alcoholic, no problem. When it came to pornography, when it came to a sexual addiction, he was shameful about it. He was shamed. He was shamed to tell his new sponsor one-on-one that he had that problem, which I think is very revealing to the nature of the beast, that we're so afraid that people are going to judge us for sexual aberrations that we are afraid to seek recovery. You have to acknowledge a problem before a solution can be found. So if we can't acknowledge there's a problem to someone, how would we find the solution?
And the viewing of porn seems so harmless, so innocuous, it's hard to believe the harm that it causes. A lot of people feel like they can do that. It's a highly private thing. Most people do it alone. And so it's hard to imagine that it is harmful at all. And it's really hard to believe now that there's new brain research with brain scans that show what exactly is happening in the brain. There's a lot of new research that shows that the viewing porn over a series of days and weeks has a similar effect, very similar to snorting cocaine. That's hard to believe, but that is what the research is finding. An especially harmful effect to teens or even children who view porn, which is on the rise. So it's a very complex issue, and it's hard to imagine that it's harmful, but the research is showing it is very harmful.
Thank you. I want to regress just for a moment. When we first come into the rooms of recovery and we start working the 12-step process, the 12-step process, if for some of you don't know exactly how it works, but it's the repentance process. This is a God-given modality to get spiritually bankrupt in most cases into an attitude of spirituality so they can progress to an understanding by clearing up the wreckage of their past, to acknowledging that there's a fact that they are addicted. Most people think that an alcoholic lives under the bridge or under the overpass, and they live in cardboard boxes, and these are denizens beyond redemption and beyond understanding, that they're weak-willed people. Why don't they just stop? And of course, the churches, I believe at the last count was like there's 118 variations from churches on how to work the 12-step programs. Unfortunately, some of the churches who work this program are, they look at AA as like we're not doing it right. My question always is, and in my church, is if the 12 steps are not a gift from God, why have we adopted it? And if it is a gift from God, why are we changing it? I digress. So that you come in, you work the steps, you put alcohol away. We find that alcohol is a symptom of the disease. Now you start working the steps, you clear that up, you clear up the wreckage, you acknowledge God, you have a higher power. For those who still have that hard time, and that's okay. I'm not anyone's judge. All I'm here is to help you. You help me, so I can help you to stay sober. That's it. Our primary purpose is to. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me share my favorite quote: that using and abusing alcohol and drugs is a search for God at the wrong address.
Ah, I like that. That's good.
That's my experience. And let's remind our listeners that we are here to share our experience, our strength, and our hope. We're not here to give advice. We're not here as a news broadcast, and we're not selling anything. We're sharing our experience, strength, and hope. And that my experience is just that my alcohol use was a search for God at the wrong address. And so is viewing porn, and so is the sex addiction.
once Dr. Young, to bounce off that, Dr. Young, the Y-O-U-N-G, had said that he felt that alcohol was a lower form of spirituality, that we were getting a certain spiritual fix. And they, you know, they call it spirits, demon rum, spirits.
Right.
There's a connection to that. But I digress a little bit. Once we clear this up, the alcohol, and we don't have that to rely on anymore, the emotional baggage comes in. And the normal, natural man wants to get away from all this emotional turmoil that he's not used to. These are alien feelings that have been suppressed for a very long time. So if he can partake in a sexual tryst, the 12 and 12 says, how many of us speak love with our lips, but in the chambers of our mind are really it's about lust? And that, and at that time, it's so we can distract ourselves from the pain that comes from our past behaviors. Pornography,
yes,
is pornography is probably right now on the rise in epidemic, and epic proportions. Once the statistics and the numbers are presented, it's staggering.
Well, we were talking a couple of days ago about people in the past that have gotten into trouble looking at nudity. King David is an example from the Old Testament. But never in the history of humankind has a person been able to walk into a room, touch three keys on a computer, and be able to view naked images. It is easier than it's ever been. It's easy for children to access it, easy for adults to access it. And so we're dealing with something that is a first in humankind.
Yeah. And now you look at pornography as, okay, well, you know not to go to pornography. It's like fire. You know you're going to get burnt, or curiosity. If you're an intelligent person, you know, they say alcoholics are more intelligent than the average person. I've only heard other alcoholics say that, but I think there is there's some credibility to that. Once people sober up, they're able to accomplish phenomenal things that they would never even have expected to, but I think that's part and parcel to having a spiritual awakening.
I agree.
The curiosity factor is one, but I think now we're finding out it starts even before that. Children start out at a very young age, and everybody thought this was great, the eye-hand coordination with the Game Boy. I don't know, where do they start? 5 years old, 4 years old? They're on computers now.
Yes.
They're living in a two-dimensional reality. Their minds are being digitally reprogrammed at the digital level. So that's just two-dimensional reality prepares the mind for pornography. Now they have access. Now you're on the computer all that time, three keystrokes. How often does pornography pop up? How often does the devil pop up? You know, whenever he can. And sometimes when you least expect it. So, hey, a naked woman. They found that even monkeys will stare at a bottom of another female monkey. How primal is that?
Instead of eating their food, they will forego eating in order to stare at a nice naked monkey bottom.
I've been there. I think that's why they call it monkey. So this is very primal. Our brain is not prepared for this onslaught of two-dimensional reality in this quantity. The statistics show that by the age of 15, most boys are viewing, what was it, I think 10 to 15 pornographic images a week. So that means if somebody out there is looking at 100. So this becomes very, now there's the, okay, so we got pornography going. Now what's the consequence of this? Boys academically are dropping behind girls at every level, from the elementary school to graduate school. Boys are five times more likely to have attention deficit disorder. It used to be that boys would have a fear of rejection from women. Now, it's a fear of intimacy. Boys are getting more, and I had an experience with that just recently with a sponsee, and I just got this information. Boys seem to bond more and more so with other boys. It's not a sexual, they said it's, there is a phenomenon going on, but it's not a sexual phenomenon. Boys are bonding more and more with boys because they can relate more, and they're having harder and harder time relating to women. Are you familiar with that, Harold?
Well, yes, that's what we're finding, and the whole porn problem on the internet is just fueling that that division. The shocking thing is the fact that this viewing all these two-dimensional and shocking images is having several effects on young people and on adults. One of them, what they're calling it on the sites that are trying to, and the universities' research departments that are trying to help teens, they call it rewiring the brain. They're searching for some words to describe what's happening. But it causes changes in the brain organically, and that rewiring makes it real hard for the young men to concentrate. It alters the way the brain actually develops. What they're finding with the brain research all the way from infants up till young adults in their 20s, the brain does not finish developing until the late 20s, age 27 on average. And while it's developing, if we subject it to cocaine, or we subject it to porn, or we subject it to doses of alcohol, that alters the development itself. Then in adults, once the brain is developed, that brings on some changes, and one of which is the inability to relate with a real human being. Viewing porn makes it more difficult to relate to a real person. And for a married man, that would, of course, be his wife. The other effect is that viewing porn produces erectile dysfunction. Look at the growth in porn, and look at the growth in the sales of Viagra and Cialis.
That's interesting. Yes, I just I became aware of that thanks to you just recently. I was surprised. And as soon as I heard that, and you know, every other commercial on TV is about selling Viagra or one of the erectile dysfunction or, you know, herbal treatments for this, and it's just on and on and on. So you're watching pornography, and of course, I believe that it's really connected up with masturbation, I think, and that's what I've read, as the outlet. And then as more you do it, the more it becomes addictive and the less ability you have to express it. And then you got to take Viagra.
Let's talk for a moment about what we mean by addictive. Basically, what that is describing is that you need more stimulation to receive the same pleasurable effect. So with cocaine, people take cocaine. The first time they take it, they really get this uncomparable high, and then from that point on, they're always chasing that first high. Well, with the same thing occurs with masturbation. The research is showing that men need a higher level of stimulation through masturbation, higher and higher as the weeks go by, until they're being quite violent with their genitals in order to reach an orgasm. And so there's no way that regular sex with a woman can reproduce the level of stimulation that some of the masturbation that has increased in intensity over time. Sex with a woman cannot anywhere near match that. So we've got changes to the brain and changes to the stimulation level in the genitals all playing together to really destroy the sexual part of the relationship.
Which is a big part of a, you know, it's an intimate relationship that develops into romantic intimacy. But first, it's a spiritual intimacy, a verbal intimacy, sharing. Scott Peck said intimacy was the ability to share one's reality without fear of judgment or change. If one person's
right.
reality is so askew, if the woman is living in an analog world and the man is living in a two-dimensional holographic world, how can you share that reality? I mean, it's like different planets, different universes. You know, how can this connection, how can you make that connection? So the woman just becomes a sexual object, and not even that, because you're not going to get what you want. It's not going to fulfill your need. My understanding was, with alcohol, cocaine, prescription drugs, any type of stimulant like that, you want more and more to get you. You're chasing that original. I would call it a spiritual euphoric high. You're always chasing this nebulous high. You never really get there anymore, but you're always chasing it. You know, like the chasing El Diablo or something. You know, you never get to it.
And the at least with another human being, you can some men are successful in talking their spouses into drinking with them or taking drugs with them, but when it comes to pornography, that's the last thing that he wants to ask his wife to share. Some people do, I think, but it's very rarely successful. With the couples that I've met and worked with, it does not lead to more intimacy, because the woman always feels compared to these images, these two-dimensional images, and often they're airbrushed. That's been in the news a lot. The porn queen of the week.
Yeah,
that there was so much airbrushing that they're actually banning that ad because it was just airbrushed beyond reality. So, and the ladies are at home are saying, I can't compete with this in any way, and so she gets irate because she's constantly trying to talk her into something or other that she takes as an affront.
An offense.
Yes.
The other point I'm trying to make was that with cocaine and all the other alcohol, you want more and more. The addiction, what I've just understood, was the addiction with pornography is that it's different in the sense that you want different. You're not looking
yes.
for the same. You can't get the same fix from the same, more of the same. So you have to get different every time to get a cortical arousal.
The research shows is that the person that's viewing the porn needs different images all the time and more shocking images all the time.
Yeah, and there's no end to it. There's no end. And some, I've personally experienced men in the program, they lost their girlfriends. They become completely isolated. They'll go to work.
Very, very dangerous for an addiction.
Oh, yeah. They go to work, and then they come home. The girlfriend won't stay with them. The wife won't stay with them anymore, and they're frustrated. They don't understand. They have a woman there to participate in one of God's most valuable parts of having a body in creation, and they prefer to be in a two-dimensional reality. That's not real. It's a fantasy. It's even worse than a fantasy. But they spend thousands of dollars. Last count, it's a $14 billion industry and growing. For every movie made in Hollywood, 11,000 porno movies are made.
Wow.
This is a national epidemic. It needs to be addressed.
And the interesting thing about troubled relationships is that if a man has turned to alcohol to medicate his feelings, his wife will have very similar feelings as if she were betrayed because he's seeing another woman, only it's worse because alcohol is on every street corner, and now we're seeing the same effect with porn. It's much worse than him betraying his spouse with another woman. He's betraying his spouse with thousands and thousands of women available on any computer anywhere. So it's a very severe problem. But let's talk about the solution somewhat.
The solution, yes, okay. I was just thinking of that too. The solution would be education. It's usually the key to most of these problems. People are not educated. Now, of course, some folks aren't going to want to hear this. They love their sin. They love their deal, and they don't want to hear anything that's going to rock their boat. The other part of the solution is the 12 steps. Now, there's SA, Sex Addicts Anonymous. There's SLAA, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. There are recovery groups that hone in on this problem, and they take this from a spiritual. This is a spiritual warfare. Make no mistake. We do not fight against flesh and blood, but principalities and dominions and wickedness in high places. And I believe that this is a wickedness that's permeating the society. The 12 steps of the repentance process, but you have to man up. If this is where your problem is, you got to go let somebody know, somebody who can help. And the 12-step programs are really good at this. Now, the love of Jesus is important, and the repentance process through the churches are good, but I have found that if you're really serious, you go to the source. And, of course, now Harold has credentials in the recovery field, and which cannot be dismissed for these kind of things. But my experience is the spiritual solution can take care of this, and it has to be brought down to the children now. Let's start getting rid of those Game Boys, and let's start getting rid of the Xboxes and all that. Oh, wow, some of these folks are completely addicted to it. I never have. I used to see my grandson playing with this, and, I thought, this is really a good thing for him to get that attuned and that his ability to manipulate small bits of information with the eye-hand coordination, and we're all going towards computers, and this will be a leg up for him in the technical world to come. I saw that as a good thing. But now, after this information, it is not. It is not. And an extended time on the computer is not a good thing. You're back in the two-dimensional world. Where's print? You got the Kindle. Actually, print is dying out. as we know it. You got to be back on the computer and again to read. You know, where's the books? When was the last time you were actually in a library? Wow, not many anymore. I bet they're like ghost towns. I don't go.
Yeah, my grandma used to say, put that down and go out and play. You know,
yeah,
at one point, it was another thing that's damaging to kids is viewing domestic violence. And I ran a support group for boys 5 to 9 years old who we were helping heal from having viewed domestic violence, which is similar to this problem we're discussing tonight. One of the best things for those boys was to go out into the fresh air and swing in a swing. For some reason, that had a wonderful effect on them, a calming effect, and helped them adjust and become better able to deal with the real world. Swinging. It had nothing to do with a computer screen, and so that's still the case. Swinging on a swing is a healthy thing. We're not sure why. Another wonderful, wonderful therapy is the 12 steps themselves. It's the most wonderful therapy in the world. We don't know why. And believe me, I've been to several universities. People all over the world are trying to figure out why it works the way it does. I think I have some idea now that I've studied the Bible extensively, but the universities cannot figure out why AA groups work 10 times as well as anything they're able to put together. But it works.
I believe personally it's because God's got his hand in it. It's a repentance process, and then once you accept God, many times I get sponsees, new sponsees, they've never prayed. These are, and I'm not talking about just children. I'm, you know, we have children of all ages, but, you know, mature men, and they've never prayed per se. They don't know how to pray. You know, they might even go to church, but they've never come to an understanding what God is. You know, they've never really in their mind determined what God is. And the 12-step process asks you to do that, even if it's no God. But you eventually will come to the agreement that I've seen many atheists and agnostics in time come to the agreement of God of one way or the other. Even, militaristic atheists and agnostics come to an agreement of God as a higher power and having the ability to take us from this. Now, children,
I really appreciate the 12-step program for its ability to use terminology that I could get my mind around. And so when I first heard the phrase, a power greater than yourself, I had to think about that long and hard because my mom had taught us four boys in our family that you are the greatest. It was kind of the Muhammad Ali approach. You are the greatest. You can do anything you set your mind to. Well, that doesn't serve a person very well. And when I came up against alcohol, I realized, well, there's a power greater than me. It really whipped me. It whipped me well. So then to step from that to finding another power greater than myself, it was, I think it was made possible because I sat in those rooms and I attended meetings and I listened to other people and how they did it. And the group itself was my first higher power. It was reasonable for me to think, well, two heads are better than one, and this group, there are folks here that have accomplished something that I'd like to accomplish, so I'll adopt that as my higher power. That worked fine.
It's good. It gets you started. When I have a sponsee who doesn't know who to pray to, I'll suggest you could pray to whom it may concern. Keep it simple. We're not shoving religion down people's throats. Religion is for people who do not want to go to hell. spirituality is for people that have already been there. And most of the folks, when they come into the rooms of recovery, one way or another, they've been to hell. No doubt about it. They've been beat. They've been beat into a state of reasonableness. They're teachable. And only because of that pain, they become teachable. It's a shame. That's what it takes. It takes what it takes.
That's right.
The tougher the guy, the more brilliant the mind, the harder they have to surrender. We surrender to win. And that's not in a winner's vocabulary. How can a winner say, I surrender? You can't. And you can't until the pain gets so bad that you're willing to do anything to get at that pain and find a solution. Because your other, if it's not a spiritual solution, you're looking at incarceration, prison, asylum, or death. And this is my experience. If you're that tough, alcoholics are very tough people. They're tough. They'll go through things that most people can't even imagine.
That's my experience also. It's a great program. I owe my life to it. And every word there has been chosen and sorted, and it's very important. And so I came in and I listened. And I didn't like myself very much, but the people there loved me until I could love myself. They told me to keep coming back. And so the beginning, the tolerance, the acceptance was very important to me, and I found it there. I owe my life to the program, and the people in the program that were there before I got there. And so now I want to try to share some of my experience, strength, and hope so that I'm here when somebody new arrives and can help to do my part in giving them the same experience and love that I felt when I first arrived. And it was life-saving. It was desperately needed, and I'll be grateful forever.
Thank you, Harold. That's very moving. I understand that to be a very true and sincere and passionate statement. I suggest to people that to try this way of life before you dismiss it. Contempt prior to investigation. Nothing will hold a man against, there's no barrier against any argument and keep a man in perpetual ignorance in the concept of contempt prior to investigation. Check it out. Make a decision on what you find and what you see. Join us in the fellowship of the Spirit. You'll hear these words, experience, strength, and hope. Experience is an inventory of our past mistakes. That's how we relate to each other. Strength is the ability to lift or carry. We lift our fellows and we carry the message of recovery. Hope is the belief that our lives will continue to improve when we do the next right thing. And that next right thing is not to take that first drink of alcohol, but expand that concept out. Do not look at that first piece of porn. Do not react in that particular way. Do not do the first one. You know, it's like potato chips. You just can't have one. If you're an addict like me, one will never do. Once I open up that craving, it's hard putting the cat back into the bag or the devil back in the box. Don't do the first one. Clean house is suggested by the outline of the... Whatever your addiction is, the 12 steps is a design for living. It's not just about recovery, although that's its primary function, but it gives you a set of principles and ideas that will carry you through your rest of your life if followed.
So a couple of things happened to me when I began coming, and one of the first things that really had a beneficial effect on my life was that I came into the rooms and I listened and I found that things that I thought were normal or harmless, I could hear people sharing just how much damage and destruction had been caused by things that I thought were harmless and quite normal. My family, in my family, there was heavy drinking, and so I grew up thinking that's normal. Everybody does it, but it took years actually to until I realized the damage of it. And now I think a lot of people are having that same experience, considering. Well, two things really is recently a lot of young people tell me I can drive better when I'm high on pot. They think pot is harmless. I think they also think that porn is harmless. And so do we have the courage to really be scientific, take a good long look at this, and acknowledge that marijuana is not harmless? Porn is not harmless, and do we have the courage to really look at the scientific evidence? Because it is there. One of the best ways, I think, is to, I know some people don't like insurance companies, but they do go to the trouble to investigate things and show where the dollars are. If you follow the trail of money, you can find out a lot of accurate information. And indeed, the bus lines, the truck lines, the airlines will not allow somebody with marijuana in their system to work there, to drive their vehicles, because it slows down your reaction time and you're a danger on the road or in the air. And I'm just waiting for the time when the insurance companies get around to this porn problem. And when it begins to affect the marketplace and the world, or when we can trace that, I think then we'll be able to see, well, one of the benefits of that is that there's more treatment available. I worked in a place where we helped a lot of airline pilots, and that the companies want to offer help. They don't see these as bad people. They see these as sick people that need some healing. And so that's heartwarming to see. And I'm not sure how long it will take us to wake up to the fact that the porn problem is also has become a sickness that needs healing. And as you and I believe, Joseph, it's a spiritual malady that needs a spiritual solution.
Yes. Dr. Bob used to say, trust in God and clean house. So we trust in God and we clean house. We take care of the wreckage of the past. As far as the children go, I think that's where we have to nip this in the bud. Stop rewiring their brains in a two-dimensional format. We're not prepared for that as human beings. This sets it up for the pornography to get them back into the analog world where we live, out to the sports, out to intimacy, the dances, get them off the computer, limited time. You're going to be on the computer. There's a specific reason to be there. You go get that information, and the computer's a wonderful thing. It's like having the library at Alexandria at your fingertips. How wonderful is that? Now, Any benefit is a two-bladed sword. It cuts both ways.
That's right.
The other way is porn and getting lost in a two-dimensional world. When they're closing up the casket, they're not going to put your laptop in there with you, kiddo.
There you go. Now, my first sponsor described the 12 steps and boiled them down to three. As you just mentioned, steps 1, 2, and 3 are trust God. Steps 4 through 11 are clean house. And then step 12 is help someone. So those are my three steps: trust God, clean house, and help someone.
Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help the next sufferer. What we learn is beyond the scope of just addiction, what we learn is that we now become the hands of God. We go out and help other people and find tremendous joy and spiritual power in that, in a humility that would be normally beyond our scope of understanding. I believe when we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And when we're in that service and in that moment, is that not when we're divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that moment and in that service, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead.
That is so wonderful. And well, I just had a brain freeze, so I'll say it in a few minutes when I remember it again.
Let me give you the number again. We're closing down. I'd like to hear from somebody out there that if you found the benefit from this or you had something to add, we'd be more than happy to hear from you. The call is 949-534-0621. That's 949-534-0621.
Now, I remember what it is. When I first came into the rooms and looked at the 12 steps, I was quite convinced that my life was successfully compartmentalized and no part affected any other part. I had my business world during the day and alcohol and drugs at night, and in between there somewhere my parenting, and that my alcohol and drugs didn't affect my business, I thought. It didn't affect my parenting, I thought, but much to my horror, I realized that that doesn't work at all. And so a lot of folks listening might think that they have their life compartmentalized, that one thing does not affect another, but let me give you a little heads up. It does, and we not only pay the price, but our children pay a high price for our mess-ups sometimes. So the key is to come and listen. You're welcome to come to an open AA meeting anytime you want. Sit and listen and absorb the thoughts and listen to the stories and as people share their lives and their experiences. And you can learn something and you might see yourself in some of those stories. You might get a new perspective on the problem. You probably won't hear people talking about porn very much, but here's the most wonderful thing about the 12-step program. There are many different forms of the problem. There are many different drugs. Alcohol is a drug. There's a list as long as my arm of different drugs to be addicted to. There's also porn, and there's sex, and there's eating, there's workaholics, there's all kinds of addictions, but the solution is the same. The solution to all those problems is coming, listening, finding a sponsor, working the steps with a pen and paper, and not just reading the steps off the wall, but getting to know somebody there who has applied those steps to their lives and getting to know that person and seeing something you can admire there and then pick up a pen and paper and begin working the steps yourself. No matter what the addiction is, and maybe some people don't really have an addiction, I recommend looking at those steps no matter what, because it's a plan for living. And it's successful, and it's about trust God, clean house, help somebody.
Yes, thank you, Harold. All AA meetings, all meetings in recovery, let me make it a more general statement, are, no matter what the topic spin might be, now this is our topic for tonight, secondary addictions, but whatever the topic spin, one thing you could be rest assured that they're all gratitude meetings. Everyone who's in that meeting, or for the most part, is grateful that they have found these rooms, that there is no, we don't have a governing body, we have trusted servants. We have people there whose main intent is to help you, that they may help themselves stay sober and clean, how whatever that addiction might be. And an attitude of gratitude to God. So in that sense, that every meeting in recovery is a prayer. And you'll find that if you go to these meetings, you're going to get a spiritual bump just from being with people who are seeking a spiritual solution. Even the people who are, like, for the most part, some are religious, some are not. We don't judge. We don't care. As long as it's working for you, you have to come to the agreement of who God is, who your higher power might be, and it's baby steps. You can't give them meat. You can't give a baby meat. You got to give them milk. So with rumradio.org, I like to think of it as a heavy cream dispenser. You get a little deeper. You can go to the rumradio.org website. I think you'll find a lot of really good information there. I stick to the big book and the 12 and 12 and my personal experience, strength, and hope in there, and from other people, too, that have long-term sobriety. And sometimes the best things you're going to hear comes from the mouth of a babe. Just walked in. Most of the time I tell my sponsees I prefer that they didn't share. I suggest. I only make suggestions. I can't get anybody sober. I can't get anybody off pornography. I can't keep anybody alive. All I can do is give them my experience, strength, and hope and suggest what worked for me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever 12-step program you're working with. But we find this to work, and this has worked for millions of people. Not only the people directly, but their families. The alcoholic or the person in the grips of addiction is like a tornado going through people's lives, emotionally, financially, spiritually. And once that person picks up the tools of living a sober, families. So,
well, and let me make a comment here.
Sure.
In behalf of Joseph. I admire you, Joseph, for putting this out there. You're not making money from this. It actually costs you money, but it's one of the ways that you give back. The program has saved your life, and so you put together this website just to give back to help somebody, and who knows who we've helped. If we've helped you tonight, give us go to rumradio.org, give Joseph an email, give us some feedback. We'd love to know if we've helped you a little.
That's the only, if it's a you know, like they say, the reward might not be here, but there will be a reward. It's not here later. But it's nice to know that somebody's out there, that someone's there and they're getting this. We've had Rum Radio. We're in 87-plus countries. We're over 50,000 hits to the website. We're 2 years in, and, you know, it's a slow go, but it's been 2 years now since, and it's picked up quite a bit now. I've had just under 1,000 letters and notes from around the world thanking me for putting this together. But it was a wee deal, so I'd like to invite you to rumradio.org. It'll answer some questions, your first meeting, how to sponsor.
We've got 1 minute left.
Yeah, do you have any last thoughts, Harold?
Well, no matter what your problem is, think about going to a meeting, listening, and think about looking at those 12 steps. It can be the beginning of a whole new life.
It will take you to places that you never imagined a dream. So again, thank you for listening, and I hope this was a help to some folks out there. And if you find value, pass it on. Take what you need and leave the rest. See you on the radio. This is Joseph G. Yeah. And Harold B. See you on the radio, rumradio.org.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.